Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on America's debt imbalance right after this. Tonight's report comes from The Privateer, published by William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, 4567. Again, that's William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. I guess that 4567 is the zip code. You can also contact The Privateer on the World Wide Web at www.the-privateer.com. Again, that's www.the-privateer.com. The email address is capt@the-privateer.com. Again, that's capt@the-privateer.com. The United States has done it again, and it has managed to slide itself even deeper into an external state of indebtedness. The United States' current account deficit has widened to a record $166 billion in the second quarter from the $147 billion in the first quarter of 2004. Now, that's the U.S. current account. We also call that your balance of payments deficit. The U.S. deficit on goods and services also increased to a record $150 billion from the $138 billion in the first quarter of 2004. Now, these are truly enormous numbers. These real financial numbers, which express the outflow of U.S. dollars, have on their flip side the equally enormous internal U.S. expansion of credit. On the latest official data, the U.S. federal government debt is rising at an annual rate of 10%. U.S. household debt is rising at 11%. And U.S. business debt is rising at 4% per year. Now, all of this borrowing inside the United States would be economically fine if the internal economy of the United States was also expanding in its productive output to a matching extent. But America is living on the kindness of strangers. And it's not true that America's economy is expanding at the rate of 10 or 11% per year. And since it's not so part of this massive internal borrowing is spilling over into external purchases, into the external deficit with the rest of the world, called the balance of payments deficit. You're not hearing much about this on the 6 o'clock news with Dan Rather. Now, since all deficits, that is, spending which exceeds your earnings, and all of these deficits have to be financed, the United States has to be financed by the rest of the world, and to the extent of its own external deficit on current account, the United States is living on global credit. And there are global warning bells sounding. Foreign capital inflows into the United States slowed to $265 billion from $445 billion in the first quarter. So capital inflows into the United States were running at the rate of $445 billion in the first quarter of 2004, but they're down $180 billion, down to $265 billion in the third quarter. Now, foreign purchases of U.S. equities fell to $2 billion from $4 billion in the first quarter of 2004. Foreign purchases of U.S. treasuries dropped to $35 billion from $65 billion. Purchases of U.S. corporate bonds increased to $51.5 billion from $51.2 billion. And purchases of U.S. agency bonds rose to $35.1 billion from $6.7 billion. Now, foreign official assets, assets held by foreign central banks, increased $74 billion compared with an increase of $127.9 billion in the first quarter. Now, the key numbers are the numbers on top of this page and the ones which lead into this paragraph. Because if the foreign inflow of capital ever goes below the U.S. current account deficit, then the United States economy crashes. And we're on the knife's edge, on a razor-sharp edge between collapse and being able to meet our monthly obligations. And in order for us to meet those obligations, we have to borrow the money. Now here's the tricky part in the equation. The United States federal government is now running a budget deficit in the neighborhood of $500 billion a year. Now that's a half a trillion. And we're also spending in excess of $500 billion a year in our balance of payments deficit. That is, we're buying about a half a trillion dollars a year more than we sell. That totals $1 trillion. Now, all of the money in the world at the end of the year 2004 that has been saved by countries all around the world, and there are 200 of them now, of the 200 countries in the world, if you take all of the available savings in all of the countries of the world combined, it only totals $800 billion. That means that if the people of America could borrow every dollar that's being saved in the year 2004, all the money in the world would still be 20% short, $200 billion less than we need just to finance our profligate debt spending ways. Now, you're not hearing that on the news, and the political campaign isn't telling you about how dire the economic picture is in the United States. It isn't something that just developed last month or last year. It's been developing over the last 70 years. It began with House Joint Resolution 192 in 1933 under Franklin D. Roosevelt, and it's been accelerating ever since. It really took off in 1973 when we divorced ourselves from gold, when we divorced ourselves from the hard money standard that requires that you live within your means. Now that we have fiat currency, like every other nation of the world, the imbalances have been growing since 1973 until now it infects the entire world. So let's take a little closer look at this. The current U.S. GDP, according to the latest available figures, is about $11.6 trillion. Now, of course, it was less than that 5 years ago. When Americans began their spending spree, which would double their debts in just the last 5 years, be that as it may, On average, over those 5 years, Americans have borrowed almost one-third, 31% of the U.S. GDP into existence every year since 1999. Now, this year we're claiming that our total income, that is, all Americans working together, all of the goods and services that we're going to produce will amount to $11.6 trillion. Well, now that's an illusion, as George Bush Sr. called it back when he was running for president against Ronald Reagan. He called it smoke and mirrors. Smoke and mirrors. Here's why it's smoke and mirrors. If your total sales are 11.6, and just take times 0.31, that means $3.6 trillion is being borrowed into your economy. Now here's what that means in down-to-earth terms. Let's suppose that we're making $10,000 a year, and we go out and borrow $3,600. And now we go out into the marketplace and we spend $13,600 and we amass all these receipts, and then we go to our banker and we say, well, our income is $13,600 a year, as evidenced by these $13,600 worth of receipts. When in reality, if you take the 11.6 and then subtract the 3.60 from that, you've really got an $8,000 income. So what we're doing is we're lying to ourselves. Now, our politicians lie to us, or they simply don't tell us where the real current account balance stands. I don't think that the average American knows or realizes or understands that America as a nation is spending $550 billion a year in excess of what we export. I mean, if you take everything that we export and everything that we import, we're importing $550 billion more than we export. Now, that's an event that began in 1972. It's been going on for 30 years. And these deficits are getting bigger and bigger. We owe externally now somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 trillion around the world, and there's a limit to how far this can go. Let's just think about it pragmatically. You're making $10,000 a year, and you go out and you borrow $3,600, and then the next year you make $10,000, and you go out and borrow another $3,600, and then the third year you make $10,000, and you go out and borrow another $3,600. How long can you continue to do this? Well, the answer is, you can do it as long as you can service the payments on the amount of money that you're borrowing. And we're getting very, very close now to the point where we're not going to be able to make our monthly payments. And that's what happened in Argentina. They defaulted on their payments. And it has destroyed the Argentine economy. Now, when America, which represents about 25% of the entire world's economy, collapses, it will bring down all of the economies of the world, because nations like China and Japan depend upon their export trade with the United States for a large portion of their entire economy. Or put another way, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you're making $10,000 a year. And all of a sudden, you're put on half rations. And your boss tells you, well, we're going to cut you back to half time, $5,000 a year. Could you service your debt? Could you make your payments? Could you survive? Could you function? Well, if the answer is no, neither can China or Japan or the United States or anybody else. Stand by. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock, made in Japan, for 6 a.m. and while his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. Then he puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. After cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany, goes looking as he has for many months for a good-paying American job. And at the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, turns on his TV made in Japan, and then ponders again why it is that he can't find a good-paying American job. Now, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business, dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into the power of private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, the total U.S. debt, that is government, corporate, and individual consumer debt, is estimated to be in excess of $37 trillion. Now, that's more than 3 times the total United States gross domestic product. And that debt has doubled over the past 5 years. So let's take a closer look at this. Over the past 5 years, Americans, public and private, have piled up a debt of $18 trillion in just 5 years. Now, this is an average debt increase every year over those 5 years of about $3.6 trillion. Now, most of this gigantic increase in debt went to acquire a better standard of living using borrowed money. Now, the current U.S. gross domestic product, according to the latest available figures, is about $11.6 trillion a year. It was less than that 5 years ago when Americans began this spending spree, which has doubled our debts in the last 5 years. Now, be that as it may, on average, over those 5 years, Americans have borrowed almost one-third, 31%, of our total gross domestic product into existence every year since 1999. So our gross domestic product really isn't $11.6 trillion. It's more on the order of $7.7 or $8 trillion. About $3.6 trillion less than what we're claiming it is. Now, the majority of that monstrous debt is held inside the United States by banks, mortgage lenders, credit card issuers, and so on. But today, a stupendous amount of that debt is now held by foreigners. And all of these foreigners have received that debt through the twin outflows of the U.S. trade and current account deficits, which always arrives in foreign places as U.S. dollars making purchases, but which most of the locals cannot really use inside their own country. So, they sell all of these U.S. dollars back to their own local commercial banks. Now, if these local foreign banks have no readily available use for these U.S. dollars, they then in turn lend the sum received right back to the United States financial system in order to earn a rate of interest themselves, or they sell on their currency floors of their own local currency. Such additional selling of U.S. dollars by these foreign central banks would normally cause the U.S. dollar to fall in value against that country's local currency. But if the local government and its tame central bank does not want to see their national currency climb in value against the U.S. dollar, which would hamper their own exports and then entice more imports into their country. So then the local central bank is sent into the fray to buy these additional U.S. dollars to stop the national currency from climbing in value against the U.S. dollar in the marketplace. Now, this foreign central bank stands with these just-arrived U.S. dollars. So what is it going to do with them? Well, it does the obvious. It turns around and lends those new additional U.S. dollars that they've received in China, Japan, and Singapore right back to the United States, where they can buy U.S. treasuries, or corporate bonds, or municipal bonds, which helps fund the U.S. budget deficit and the total U.S. internal deficit, and holds internal U.S. interest rates very low. Now, these U.S. dollars are right back inside the U.S. Treasury, which spends them inside the U.S. economy. Now, the foreign central bank can also buy any of the numerous U.S. agency debt paper, you know, debt paper from states and city and county governments, or they promptly lend these fresh U.S. dollars back to eager American borrowers. The money is right back inside the United States financial system again, leaving only a trail of debt paper and debts owing all over the world. John Maynard Keynes called this pump priming. And that's what's been going on during the Bush administration. You see, during the last year of the Clinton administration, the stock market bubble broke in March of 2000, which began the long recession. So to call this Bush's recession, I think, is a disservice to Bush. Bush wasn't elected until November of 2000, took office in January of 2001. The recession was well underway. It was a recession which was inspired by or caused by the excesses of the bubble that was created by our Federal Reserve and our monetary policies through the 1990s, which was started by President Bush in 1990, the first President Bush. The discipline that comes from hard money, that is gold and silver coin, has been abolished in this country, first in 1933 when we abolished gold coin, and then in 1965 when we went off of silver coins and began making those sandwich coins, those clad coins. We Americans have not had any monetary discipline since 1973. Now, the majority of this monstrous debt is held inside the United States by banks, mortgage lenders, credit card issuers, and so on. And this money loop can make debt mountains. And that's exactly what it's done. We have a mountain of debt all over the world. And that's because American dollars are being used by all of the other nations in the world as the reserve currency. This is the currency that everybody uses to settle their debts. So if the Germans have a debt with the English, they don't settle that in Europe, in euros or rupees or rubles. They settle it in dollars. We used to settle those debts in gold. Now we use dollars. And the Americans now are inflating those dollars. And every new dollar that's run off the printing press or created out of the air makes the existing dollars just that much cheaper. And that's what we call inflation. Now, if these local foreign banks have no readily available use for these dollars, they either lend the sum received right back to the U.S. financial system in order to raise or to earn a rate of interest themselves. And if anything goes on long enough, it tends to look normal. So this process has been going on now since 1973, and it looks pretty normal to everybody, doesn't it? In brief, that's the real problem here in America. It's a decades-long sequence of rolling credit expansions, each one bigger than the one before, and has made the present circumstances look normal to most Americans. But a doubling of our debt in just 5 years with these newly arrived debts equal to 36% of the average gross domestic product over those 5 years is anything but normal. In terms of sane economics, it amounts to borrowing one-third of the American nation's gross domestic product over the last 5 years into existence. So in terms of all valid economic theory, led by the Austrian school and the classical economists, this is a totally unviable set of circumstances and is going to come to a grim and bitter end. In terms of comparative economic history, the current U.S. situation resembles nothing as much as the recycling of dollars to the Latin American nations back in the 1970s when the petrodollars, which were gained by OPEC, were then recycled there as new loans. The difference is that today it is America's own currency, the U.S. dollar, which is being recycled back to the United States. Well, what happens when we recycle all of this free money, this apparently highly liquid, expansive use of money back into a nation's economy? What happens? Has there ever been any historical precedent? Have we ever observed this before? Well, can you remember the Latin American debt crisis? Can you remember back in the early 1970s when the officers of the privateer were all young, handsome, and indestructible? Or at least in their own minds they were. The OPEC, you know, the oil cartel, pulled a fast one. Because of Israel's war in 1967 and again in 1973 against the Arabs, OPEC hammered the price of oil upwards. The result was an instant recession across the West and in the United States. Speed limits were 55 miles an hour. Can you remember that? Well, as U.S. dollars flowed in tidal waves into the coffers of such OPEC nations as Saudi Arabia, they made truly heroic efforts to spend it all, but they couldn't spend that amount of money. The mountain of U.S. dollars just kept getting higher and higher, so something had to be done. So the New York Money Center banks found a solution. Sitting there with piles of OPEC U.S. dollars, mainly from Saudi Arabia, on deposit, they decided to lend these dollars to South America. There was one condition, however. The U.S. exporters got the first take on any sales of imports to South America. So U.S. exports soared. South American economies boomed. Their debts to the United States climbed higher and higher. Then came the inevitable crash or collapse. In essence, it was just like the break which happened in 1997 to 1999 when the Southeast Asian economies fell in a heap after a preceding period of heavy monetary inflows. So this isn't something that has never occurred before. It's been around for a long time. Well, back in the 1970s, it was Latin America, mainly Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, which fell into an economic heap. Suddenly, it was the New York Money Center banks which were in trouble, and they had made the loans, and they had made them with money that the Saudis had lent them. Now, another solution was found. It would not do to have the U.S. money center banks go broke in the process, making the Saudis go broke because the U.S. banks could not repay them. So the International Monetary Fund was sent in to rescue this sad situation. This is back now in the 1970s. Well, let me give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. And for more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, so for more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, simply call the law school direct. The number is 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember that introductory CD package is free of charge. Well, back in the 1970s, it was Latin America, mainly Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, which fell into an economic heap. Suddenly, it was the New York money center banks which were in trouble. They had made these loans, and they had made them with money that the Saudis had lent to them. Another solution was found. It would not do to have the U.S. money center and the money center banks go broke. So in the process of making these loans to the South Americans, the International Monetary Fund was sent in to rescue these nations in the South. But did you notice that in Argentina, when they collapsed just 2 years ago, the IMF was nowhere to be seen? Now, do you suppose that the IMF is going to come in and rescue the United States of America? I hardly think so. I think that this debt bubble is so humongous and so all-encompassing that it will bring down the entire world economy, just like it did in the 1930s with the Great World Depression. Then, of course, there will be new money issued, and there will be new terms and conditions, new lending, and a massive change in the ownership of massive amounts of property. That's what a depression or a revaluation of money portends. It's going to entail a massive transfer of wealth. And the question, of course, for you to answer is, does this mean that there's going to be a massive transfer of my wealth to somebody else? And if that's what's in the cards, what can you do to protect what wealth you do have? And that's why we have a business school, to show you how to get the most bang for your buck. Now, all of the financial crises of the post-1971 to 73 fiat money era, including the recurrent ones in Latin America today and the recent one in Asia in 1997, were caused by an earlier prolonged and massive inflow of foreign capital. This new money first arrived as very easy external loans, followed by foreign investors trying to participate in the internal economic boom. And that's what you see going on right now today in the United States. The old adage that says history repeats itself is going on today, because that's precisely the laws of economics in operations. So when we see that happen in the 1930s, we see it happen in the 1970s, we see it happen in the 1990s, if it's happened to others in the past and you see the same events transpiring today in America, well, wouldn't the logical conclusion be that we can expect the same results that Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico got in the 70s and the Pacific Rim nations got in the late 1990s? Why would we be any different? Now, the situation in the United States today, however, is different in this regard, and that is because the internal boom of the 1990s in the United States was not originally caused by a huge inflow of foreign money. It was caused by a huge increase in the pace of internal U.S. credit debt expansion. And it was only after the 1990s boom was well underway that we saw an inflow of foreign money coming into the United States to participate in the boom started to arrive and then accelerate. Now, the financial booms outside the United States, which have been such a feature of the last three decades, were precipitated by external agencies. The 1980s and 90s booms inside the United States were precipitated by the U.S. itself, using the internal means of launching and accelerating internal credit expansion. Now, the United States is unique in that it does not need to import a reserve on which to build a credit expansion. And that's because the U.S. Central Bank can and does create its own and everyone else's reserves in the world. It's called the world reserve currency, the U.S. dollar. And by using these self-chosen internal means, the United States has financially and economically placed itself in a Latin American situation. It arrived there back in early 2000 when the U.S. stock markets broke down in March of the year 2000. So we decided that what we would do is come up with a go broke or double the bet. Go broke or double the bet. That was the alternative which the U.S. economy faced when the U.S. stock markets keeled over in early 2000. So the United States could have taken a deep economic recession as the price to be paid for its credit expansion extravaganza during the 1990s, or we could double the bet by once again trying to jump over an incipient economic recession by means of an even more extraordinary wave of U.S. internally generated credit expansion. Now, that was, of course, what Greenspan and the Federal Reserve and the powers that be inside the United States chose to do. That was the course of action that we embarked upon back in 2000 under the Federal Reserve's Chairman Greenspan. So the Federal Reserve cut their Fed funds rate down to just 1%. The Treasury swung its U.S. federal budget into a monstrous deficit. And the Bush administration distracted the American people with a war in the Middle East. Now, with everyone's minds on the war in the Middle East, nobody's paying any attention to this monstrous debt burden that we have in the United States and indeed around the world. And then on top of that, none of this has actually worked. So after March of 2000, 2.7 million American manufacturing jobs disappeared. And only about 160,000 of those manufacturing jobs have reappeared over the last several months of this new recovery period. So today, the United States stands where Latin America did back in the 1970s. And there is nobody on the world scene that is capable or able to bail the United States out. Now, there's a global consequence that comes from these malinvestments. Since America represents a full 25% of all of the commerce, all of the GDP of the world, when America's economy collapses, it will take everybody else's economy with them. And that's the dilemma. It's the dilemma that everyone in China and Japan and the United States shares. We're borrowing this money from the Japanese and the Chinese and everybody else in the world. Because if they don't lend to us, we collapse. On the other hand, if we continue to borrow all of this money that we cannot pay back, we, at some point in time, are going to default on our payments, which will precipitate the collapse. Now, talk about being caught on the horns of a dilemma. This is economically fundamental. When anybody has borrowed and has the loan in hand, they can spend more than their own current earnings previously allowed them to do. We talked about that a little earlier. You're making $10,000, you go out and borrow $3,600, now you're going to spend $13,600. Well, that extra spending ability is what fakes out the businessmen. You see, the businessmen see the spending without considering the source, so they strive to meet this extra demand by expanding their businesses. They hire more people, they buy more machines, and they produce more goods and services. And this is where the economic real problem arrives. You see, these bigger businesses and the brand new businesses that are brought forward by all of this increased demand, this increased artificial demand, this borrowed demand, are totally dependent on that ongoing demand. The problem is that the demand for all of these additional products and services is literally underpinned by all of this borrowing. So the borrowing must continue, and the borrowing must increase in order to maintain the new size and the new scope of this new debt bubble. Now, you're not producing any more than the $10,000 that you've been producing all the time. But when you go out into the marketplace with this extra $3,600 of borrowed money and you spend that $3,600 into new goods and services, it says to the businessmen, well, gosh, last year we were selling Gordon $10,000. This year we're selling Gordon $13,600. We need to put on more employees to satisfy that demand. But you see, boys and girls, I'm not actually producing $13,600. I'm only producing $10,000. I've been producing $10,000 every year. So we're sending false signals to the economy. This is the Keynesian pump priming. It really feels good and it really looks good for a few years while we're doing the pump priming and we're hiring all these people and we're making all of these dollars. But then there's an inevitable reality that shows up. It's kind of like a drunk going out. Boy, it feels real good while we're drinking. But tomorrow, it isn't going to feel very good. It's going to feel pretty poor. So more and more borrowing inherently means more and more debt, which is carried by the borrower. This is where the economic unviability of any credit expansion really shows up. To attempt to show or claim that credit expansions are economically normal, or perhaps even good for an economy, you have to accept an infinite height of debt. If an infinite height of debt outstanding is not acceptable, it then follows that all episodes of credit expansion come to an end at some point in time. Now, when the credit expansions come to an end, we call those recessions. And if it's really bad, we call it a depression. Now, we have suffered through many of these recessions since the end of the last Great Depression in 1937. But now we're on the verge of a new worldwide Great Depression. Well, stand by. We'll be right back with more on the economic imbalances right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Tonight we are reviewing The Privateer, the September number 510 issue published by William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, the zip code 4567. Again, that's William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa, N-O-O-S-A, Heads, H-E-A-D-S, Queensland, Australia, 4567. The price is $180 a year, worth every dime. We're reviewing the enormous debt, that is the malinvestments that have been going on over the past 30 years are about to come to a climax. We're being told over the news media incessantly that we're in a recovery. This isn't a recovery, it's a bubble. And it's actually a bubble which is on top of the 1990s bubble. These bubbles have to break about every 10 years, and then we go into a recession. We had a recession in 1979, we had another one in 1990, and then we had another one in about the year 2000. These recessions can go on for a year, 2 years, 3 years. This one's been going on for quite some time. A recession is termed a negative growth rate in the gross domestic product for two consecutive quarters. Well, now, we haven't had a negative growth rate, but the positive growth rate has been very anemic. So in trying to re-expand the size of the 1990s bubble through the period of, say, 2002 or 3 through, they would hope, the year 2010 or so, has not materialized. In fact, we're now on a knife's edge. We're about to slip over into a massive depression. And that's going to occur as soon as the United States of America, like Argentina, is unable to meet its obligations, unable to meet its payments. When individuals do that, we call it bankruptcy. When nations do that, they go into insolvency. They then devalue their currency. And that's about where the United States is now. We're devaluing our dollar slowly but surely. And we're having problems in meeting our payments. In fact, we have to borrow $2 billion a day to meet our obligations. Now, there isn't $2 billion a day out there to borrow. And the people that are lending us the money, mainly our Chinese and Japanese trading partners, in order to keep our spending bubble going, are running out of money themselves. They're making good profits, and they're reinvesting their profit into our debt. But they're having a problem doing that. Now, when they do end, and all of these businesses which started up and or ever expanded come to realize that they have not invested wisely, that they have malinvested, they realize that all along the expansion was underpinned by their customers' ability to borrow. So when the borrowers slow down, or when the borrowers stop buying entirely, the business stand, the businesses, you know, all these businesses that have expanded, stand with acres of idle machinery. Now, the other feature of a credit expansion is that any nation which indulges begins to haul in more imports. So if at this point the exporting nations fail to examine where all of this additional demand is coming from, they will not be able to tell if it's from a genuine increase in real earnings from the importing nation, or if it is only because credit is being expanded inside of that importing nation. A demand from real earnings makes it safe and profitable for the exporting nation to increase its exports. A demand from a credit expansion makes it unsafe for the exporting nation to do so. And if exporting nations do expand to cater for a credit expansion in the importing nation, they will ultimately end up with their own acres of idle machinery. Now, the entire world is sitting on malinvestments. The present state of the world and its malinvestments looks like this. On a global scale, there is no better example than China. You see, China now stands with a gross domestic product of about $1.4 trillion. So just compare $1.4 trillion with $11.6 trillion. So by comparison, the Chinese economy is a dwarf compared with the American economy at $11.6 trillion, which in reality is really about $8 trillion because we're borrowing the difference between 8 and 11 into existence. But leaving that out of the equation, 1.5 compared to $8 trillion still makes America a giant and China a dwarf. Well, fully 46% of China's gross domestic product is geared to their export market. And mainly, that 46% of China's gross domestic product is aimed at the export market of the United States. Now, this example is duplicated to lesser degrees in all of the other Asian economies. And as this global report has already showed you, the United States has borrowed $18 trillion over the past 5 years. A large part of this borrowing has been spent on these imports. Asia has built and expanded their export capacity on the basis of this borrowing in the United States. So the present state of the United States economy is precarious. At best, it's precarious. And the U.S. internal economy is going nowhere. This is despite the fact that the U.S. federal debts are expanding at a rate of 10% a year. American consumer debts are expanding by an equal amount, 11% a year. And our U.S. businesses by 4% a year. Now, these numbers are the internal U.S. credit expansion. The spillover is the United States external deficits on current account and trade. These two deficits, the $500 billion federal deficit and the $500 billion current accounts deficit, those two together have to be financed by money coming into the United States. We're not producing that here. And these two deficits show that the external debts are going up, up, and away. And the only thing which is currently holding the entire U.S. economy, monetary and financial edifice up, is all of this new money rolling in from the rest of the world. So we're dependent. Our standard of living in America is dependent on the borrowing of this one-third now of our gross domestic product. Put another way, one-third of your income, one-third of your standard of living is dependent upon your borrowing on your credit cards. And Americans have been living this way now for the last 10 years. I have students coming to school where it's very common for them to have a credit card debt of $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000. Common. It scares the bejesus out of me. I don't have any debt at all. None. Zero. Zilch. And I sit here with my wife and we ponder some of these debt structures and we say, gosh, how would we manage if we had a debt of $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000 to service every month on our credit cards? How would we manage if we had a mortgage payment of $1,000 or $2,000 a month on our house? How would we manage if we were making $500 or $1,000 a month car payments? You know, boys and girls, I don't know how you people manage with those kinds of debts. And indeed, 1.6 million Americans last year couldn't manage and filed for bankruptcy. And every year sets a new record in the millions now of people filing for bankruptcy in the United States. And that's because you people cannot manage. You cannot service your debts. And yet, if you don't borrow more, service more debt, and continue the spending spree, because 67% of the U.S. economy is built upon consumer spending. Think of that. Two-thirds of the gross domestic product of $11.6 trillion a year is predicated upon spending, not producing, not production. It's not what you're creating. It's what you're consuming. And then one-third of that entire $11.6 trillion is predicated upon borrowing from other people around the world to keep your consumer spending at $11.6 trillion a year. Is that a house of cards? I ask you, do you call that a fundamentally stable, sound, and secure economy? You know, last week I talked about mind control. Has your mind been controlled, or have you simply lost your mental faculties? Anybody that can read these numbers, and these numbers, as Buckler points out from time to time, come right out of the U.S. government offices. They come right out of the Treasury, the Federal Reserve. They come out of Wall Street banking houses. And we presume the numbers are true. And keep this in mind, these are the best possible numbers. I mean, these people are putting the best possible face on this impossible circumstance. And even when you put the best possible face on this impossible circumstance, it should tell anybody, you don't have to be some kind of a economics genius, just anybody, any Joe Sixpack should be able to see this is a house of cards. This is Alice in Wonderland fairy tale time. These are malinvestments. On a global scale, there's no better example than China. China has 50% of its export trade. 50% of its economy is based upon export trade. If there's any slowdown in the world economy, China collapses. Economically, they collapse. Japan collapsed. Singapore, the Philippines. It already happened to them in 1997. And it's about to happen to them again. And we have to continue our buying to prop up their economies. They have to keep exporting in order to keep up their economies. And we're out of money, and they're not able to lend us enough to continue the borrowing spree. Now, isn't that just real special? We're going to have to leave it right there, and we'll come back and we'll take this up again tomorrow. When we come back, talking about the privateer and climbing a mountain of imbalances. America's debt imbalance. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, there's the signal that says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.